Well, thanks to those of you who came out this Sunday morning, and thank you to those who listened to these talks from the ISKCON Desire Tree website in Bombay, and also downloading them from iTunes as podcasts. Thanks also to those who become members through the website at www.tahkrishnas.org. Without the support of our members, we couldn't do what we do. Everything is inspired by the teachings of the founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Today we want to talk about the importance of running your own race. It's easy to go through life competing with everyone around us when we see someone more talented, more gifted. Instead of running our own race and being comfortable with who we are, so often we feel inferior and we feel like we've got to catch up to them. We can live our whole life always trying to measure up to someone else instead of celebrating other successes and staying in our own lane. We think, I've got to do better, I've got to keep up with someone else or else they're going to pass me. Instead of focusing on our own race, we find it irresistible to look at the runner on our right, look at the runner of our left, and get distracted from what it is that God created us to become. Our neighbor drives into his driveway next door with a brand new car. And initially, we're so happy that he's got a new car, that he's been blessed in that way. But as time goes by, it kind of niggles and niggles and niggles and niggles at us. And we find that we want a new car, too. We want to keep up with the Joneses. Or ladies, you get that new outfit, and for a while, you're the cat's meow. But then someone with a smaller dress size and a more expensive outfit comes onto the scene, and all of a sudden your outfit isn't so much of a topic to discuss or talk about. And so you say, I wish I looked better, I wish I could get a better outfit. This is a never-ending cycle. As soon as we find someone to catch up to, and assuming we do catch up to them, there's someone beyond that then we have to feel like we have to catch up to them. It's liberating to realize I'm not really competing with anyone. I don't have to have a house as big as my neighbor in order to feel good about myself. I don't have to wear the same dress size as my friend in order to feel good about myself. I don't have to drive the same car as my neighbor in order to feel good about myself. I understand I'm not in competition with anybody. I'm not in competition with my brother or my sister or my neighbor or my co-worker. Even in the spiritual life, there's no point at which we come to rest. At the end of each chapter in the classic Chaitanya Charitamrita, the biography of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that was written 500 years ago by Krishnadas Kaviraj, he ends each chapter by saying, Rupa Naraganata Pade Yaibi Akuti. This great, great advanced transcendentalist, pure in heart and saintly in character, is himself looking in the distance at his spiritual masters, Rupa Naraganath, and trying not to lose sight of them, and trying to catch the dust of their lotus feet on his head. And they themselves are looking at their guru. So there's no point at which we ever come to rest. We're always in a state of becoming, both now in the conditioned state and in the liberated state. Prabhupada writes here in his commentary to the Bhagavad Gita 6th chapter, 16th verse, the ungodly think that all these things are accidental and due to the strength of one's personal ability. They do not sense any arrangement behind all the varieties of people, varieties of beauty, varieties of education. There are many ungodly people, and each is enemy to the others. This enmity becomes more and more deep between persons, then between families, then between societies, and at last between nations. Therefore, there is constant strife, war, and enmity all over the world. Can I tell you about the bamboo? The bamboo stand in thickets. They're very hard. They're intractable. And when the wind comes into the bamboo thicket, it causes the bamboos to knock up against each other. And because they're so hard and intractable, friction is created. And from that friction, sparks arise. From the sparks, fire. And then the whole thicket is consumed in flames. When people become too unhealthily competitive with each other, it creates a burdensome situation on the world. And we find that societies that are self-oriented, that are self-based, that are envious and jealous of what others have or what others drive or what others do, eventually clash with each other just like the bamboo thickets. And God compares Himself in the Bhagavad Gita to the wind that comes in amongst the bamboo and catalyzes the process of conflict, and thus they end up destroying themselves. Individuals, nations, families, whole races. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Parichanaya sadhanam vinashyata duskritam dharma samstarpanapaya sambhavami yuge yuge. He says when the sense of unhealthy competitiveness becomes too strong, and when arrogant, self-centered rulers and kings and peoples are strutting around the earth, coming into conflict with each other, at that time I invent myself. With an idea of God in the center, and with an idea of each and every one of us having been created for the satisfaction of God, you can have an unlimited population in the world, and there'll never be any conflict, there'll never be any friction between people. But it says that even two ungodly people in the whole universe, if there's only two ungodly people, the whole universe itself will be too small an environment. That eventually they'll decide, you know, either you gotta go or I gotta go, and there'll be the showdown at high noon. So we need to get rid of this sense of unhealthy enviousness, jealousness, and competitiveness. And the only way to do that is to put God in the center. Because as long as each and every one of us sees ourselves as the center of the universe, we're going to clash. Take geometry, for instance, and the instrument of the compass. Compass has one sharp point, and then the other point you attach the pencil to. So you put the sharp point in, and then you draw a circle. And your circle might be an inch in circumference, or 2 inches, or 3 inches, or 4 inches. Now, every time that you move the center point and draw a circle, the circles will all clash, they'll intersect and come into conflict with each other. However, as long as you keep that sharp point, the center point, fixed, you can draw a circle of 1 inch circumference, 2 inch, 3 inch, 4 inch, and they'll all be harmonious and concurrent. Centering our lives individually and collectively under the concept that we're here to fulfill our God-given destiny and ultimately to bring a smile of pleasure and delight on the face of the Lord by the way we comport ourselves is the only way to eliminate envy and jealousy and conflict in human society. Can I tell you that the only person that we're competing with is ourselves? The only purpose that we're here is not to measure up to Jack or Jill or Tom or Harry or the person on our right or the person on our left. The only reason that we're here is to be the best person that we can possibly be. The best you may not be as successful as your neighbor, may not be as thin as your sister, may not be going as outgoing as your coworker, may not be as charismatic as your local leader, but the best you is all that we really need to measure up to. Be comfortable with who God has made us to be. Don't get distracted and lose our focus by comparing ourselves to what someone else has, or how someone else looks, or what house someone else lives in, or what car someone else drives. We've got to learn how to run our own race. I may not be the best person in the world, but we need to learn to be okay with that. And just be the best that we can be. I may not be the best father in the world, but I can be the best father that I can be, that I was made to be. I may not be the best husband in the world, but I can be the best husband that I was made to be. I may not be the best devotee in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, but I can be the best devotee that I can possibly be. I heard about this fellow who is kind of like a Romeo. He used to write poetry to his wife. He would give her candies. He would often bring her flowers. He would take her on exotic trips all over the world. Now, I don't have that ability to that extent. I'm not a Romeo, and I have to be happy with being a Churuio and just doing the best that I can. A person like that can inspire me. A person like that can challenge me, and that's all well and good. But when hearing about a person like that, I don't have to feel going around condemned, feeling like I don't measure up, or feeling like that person makes me look bad, or feeling that I've got to catch up to them. No, I've got to be comfortable knowing that God made all kinds of varieties. God made different people different. He made some people with certain strengths, and He made other people with other strengths. The fact that I'm strong in one area, another person is weak in areas that I'm weak in, they're strong in, is God's plan. We need each other. We have to depend upon each other. My individual destiny is linked with the individual destiny of every other living being on the planet. I should not seek to promote myself at their expense. Let's all advance together, and as I mentioned before, it's an eternal progress. It's an eternal occupation. In the Bhagavad Gita, 4th chapter, 13th verse, Krishna says, Chatur Varnam Mayasvistam Guna Karma Vibhagashaha. Every individual is unique. Every individual is handcrafted. When God made you, He broke the mold. But in a general sense, in a societal sense, we're all made in four different broad categories. Just like the physical body can be conceived of in four categories. The head category, or the head section, the arm section, the belly section, and the leg section. The head is for thinking and getting oneself out of trouble and figuring out how to assist when there's an injury or a pain to any other part of the body. The arms part are for protecting and defending against aggression. The belly part is for nutrition and nourishment, and the legs part do all the pedantic work in it. Similarly, society is conceived of in four different broad divisions of labor. The head is called the Brahman, the intellectual, who doesn't take any salary, but who teaches the young kids and educates them and models ideal character for them. Then the arms part are called kshatriyas, or warriors, administrators and protectors and martial artists who curb the miscreants and the criminals so that innocent people can live a safe and peaceful life. Then the belly part are called vaishyas. They're mercantile. They're men and women of commerce. They do trade. They do farming. They do banking. They provide the foodstuffs. And then the legs part are called sudras, and they assist the other three classes of society in their work. If any one part of the body becomes envious of another part of the body, the whole thing becomes dysfunctional. Say the arms are envious of the head. Imagine the arms are punching the head. It's mayhem. It's chaos. Say the legs are envious of the belly. The only way that they can all work harmoniously and do good to the entire body, irrespective, is if every feature and every talent and quality is geared towards satisfying the body as a whole. If the legs walk to where there's food, and if the hands pick the food, and if it eats the food, and then if the belly is nourished, then all the other parts of the body are automatically strengthened and vitalized. Similarly, conceiving God as the enjoyer, as the beneficiary of all our works, brings everything into sync and everything into harmony. Every part of the body can appreciate what the other part of the body is, at the same time not become envious. Let the head be happy that it's the head. The arms be happy that they're the arms. The belly happy that it's the belly. The legs happy that they're the leg. Appreciating what each and every other part does, but at the same time recognizing that I'm created for a certain purpose. And I have a certain function in regard to the whole. Take what God's given you and make the most of it. Wear it proudly. Don't compete with someone else who's not even in your race. Your race is made up of one person. That one person is you. You're not going to be accountable when and if you meet your maker. He's not going to hold you accountable. He's not going to say, why weren't you more like your sister? Why weren't you more like your brother? Why weren't you more like your coworker? No. He's going to say, why weren't you more like the person I made you to be? Were you ashamed of the talents and abilities that I give you? Did you live your life, your whole life, that the grass was always greener on the other side of the fence? I made plenty of grass, plenty of green, luscious, juicy, nutritional grass. I packed your bags. I left nothing out. I equipped you fully to fulfill the mission that you had in life. Why weren't you satisfied with what I gave you? Why did you have to have and covet the talents and gifts that I gave others for different purposes? Why didn't you run your own race? Why were you dissatisfied that you didn't play sports as good as your brother? Why are you dissatisfied and discontent that you weren't as thin as your friend. Why didn't you run your own race, make the most of what I gave you? Why didn't you live confident? Why didn't you live secure in knowing who you are? You didn't have to live your life going around thinking, I'm not to par, up to par, because I don't drive what he drives and I don't wear what she wears. When I was a kid, we used to watch Jackie Gleason all the time. And I read a few biographical paragraphs about Jackie Gleason. And he was described in an Aristotelian sense as weighty. Aristotle used the word weighty not to refer to anyone's physical characteristics, but he called a person weighty who was comfortable in their own skin, who didn't waste time and energy trying to be someone else, but focused themselves 100% on using their talents and attributes to be all that they can be. And I imagine Jackie Gleason never spent a moment trying to be anyone other than Jackie Gleason. And the fact that he took what God gave him and made the most of it, it made him so attractive and so popular, practically speaking, when he was on The Honeymooners or any other comedies or movies, you couldn't take your eyes off of him. So don't beat up yourself if you don't wear a size 5 dress. Put on that size 14 dress and strut your stuff, you know. Get it going like that. Be comfortable in your own skin. We know that there are Indy cars, there are Indy race cars, and then there's SUVs. And the Indy race cars are made for one race, the SUVs are made for something else. An Indy race car can go 200 miles an hour in the straightaway, it can take corners at 120 miles an hour. An SUV is made for different purposes. It's comfortable, it's versatile. The SUV you can take out in the suburbs and do your shopping, do your groceries, have the kids all buckled in the back seat, go to soccer games and so on and so forth. If you take the SUV out of suburbia, out of that race, and put it on the Indy track, it doesn't work. That SUV tries to take a curve at 120 miles an hour, the angels are going to be saying, "Welcome." By the same token, if you go and try to do your shopping in an Indy car, that doesn't work either. It's ridiculous. There's only room for one person. There's no luxuries. There's no comforts. It has no muffler. It makes a huge sound, which bothers everyone. There's no room for groceries in the back seat. And the suspension is so tight that if you hit a little pothole, it's going to be like you hit an earthquake. So both cars have incredible strengths, but the key is to keep each car in the race that it was intended to run. It's important not only to know who we are, but it's important that we're secure enough to admit who we're not. One of the problems in modern day society with TV and advertising, society baits us to try to become something that we're just not created to become. We all want to become an Indy race car. We want to become a muscle car. We like that sizzle factor that the India car has, and we're not willing to settle for the SUV. But can I tell you that if you're always trying to run with the fastest and hang out with the people that have the most and be one with the silvers, you're going to put too much pressure on yourself. You're not going to enjoy your life. If you want to associate with people that have a lot of money in the bank, you're going to have to get two jobs and knock yourself out and get circles under your eyes just to keep up with people that to whom that thing comes naturally, by whom they're talented in that regard. Maybe you have a coworker that's fit and good-looking and never goes to the gym. It's just genetic. But in order to try to keep up with that coworker, you go to the gym 6 or 8 hours a day and you still don't look as good as they do. So know who you're not. Be secure in who you are. There's nothing that we have to prove to anybody. We're not in the Indy race. We're in our own race. I'm not going to be frustrated or jealous thinking that I have to get over there onto the India track. We have to be secure enough to know and to admit what we're not. You know, I don't wear a size 5, but I like myself anyway. I'm not gifted in that area, but I'm not going to feel bad about it. This is a picture of Indradumna Swami. He's one of the stars of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. He gives a great lecture. He's tall. He's good looking. He's got charisma. And he sings like an angel. Through the years, the thought has crossed my mind on more than one occasion It's not fair. Why should he get all those gifts? Maybe I have one little gift of being able to speak nicely, but he not only speaks nicely and plays music nicely and has charisma, but he looks a lot better than me while he's doing all that stuff. It's just not fair. But we need to learn to be comfortable in our own skin. Indra Dumna visited us a couple of years ago, and it was interesting because he came up to me at one point during his visit and he said, "Charu," he said, "I listen to your lectures every day." He said, "I wish I could lecture like you." Here I was wasting time and energy thinking that I could be more, wishing I could be more like Indra Dumna Maharaj, and then he's wishing that he could be more like me. So let's be comfortable with who we are rather than wishing that we're someone else. Oftentimes the person that you wish you were like, they wish they were like you. I heard a story about Billy. Billy didn't like who he was, so he imitated Joey. He walked and talked and behaved like Joey. Now Joey didn't like who he was, so he walked and talked and behaved like Corey. Who didn't like who he was, who walked and talked and behaved like Frankie. Frankie didn't like who he was, so he walked and talked and behaved like Billy. The people that we often want to be like, often want to be like us. So quit thinking I should sing like them. Quit thinking I should look like them. Quit thinking I should have their charisma. Quit thinking I should lead like them. No, if the truth be known, they probably want to be like you. They see something in you that they admire. Don't you know we waste a lot of energy, both physical and emotional, trying to impress people all day long? We want to keep up with a family member, keep up with a neighbor. We want to look better than a friend. Let it go. Just let it go. All we have to do is be the best version of us. We don't have to compare ourselves with anyone in the world. When we compare ourselves with others, we're insulting ourselves and the gifts that God gave us. It's not our race. Problem is, we're not willing to recognize that God is the supreme person, that on one level or another, we want to compete with God. Ultimately, all envy, all unhealthy competition is an envy of God. I resent that he has this and he has beauty and he has strength and he has knowledge. And rather than him being the center, I would like to place myself in the center. This syndrome was exemplified by a French king named Louis XIV. He wanted to take the place of God so badly that he attached to himself the moniker of the Sun King. He told everyone to refer to him as the Grand Monarch. He took all the power away from the French nobles and consolidated it in himself. He made all the major decisions. He said, "I am the state." He employed 35,000 workers who took 30 years to build Versailles. He told Bishop Massolu that when I die, put my coffin in the chapel, dim the lights, and put a candle on the top of my coffin so that everybody's attention will be directed towards me. However, when he died and his coffin was there, the bishop went up to the coffin and he took that one lighted candle, he took his fingers and he pinched out the flame. And he announced to everybody, "Only God is great. Only God is great." C.S. Lewis wrote, quote, "There is no neutral ground in the universe. Every square inch, every split second is claimed by God." You know why God doesn't have to worry about the competition? Why God doesn't worry about consolidating his power? Because there is no competition. There is only God. Everything that we're surrounded by, earth, air, fire, water, mind, intelligence, and false ego, these are diffusions of God's energies. We ourselves are like little particles emanating from the sunshine. We're parts and parcels of God. Though we come from God, God is such a great creator that he gives us individual free will. He gives us free agency. Though we are nothing more than the energy of God, he allows us the latitude and the freedom to turn our backs on him, to deny him, and to make every effort to place ourselves in the center of life, however futile that may be. Really, there is nothing but God. God is defined Sama Chabhyadike. God is defined as that personality than whom no one can be greater or equal. He has no competition. He doesn't have to cow anybody. He stands unique and indomitable. Our problem is that we want to assume his position. In our culture, we have the great epic Mahabharata. Duryodhana, just because of his failure to be comfortable who he was, because of his failure to accept a supportive role, he wasn't comfortable being an SUV. He wanted to be an Indy car. From his very childhood, he envied the five righteous, devoted Pandavas. He envied them their good looks. He envied them their righteousness. He envied the fact that they were the sons of the king and they were anointed to be the next kings. He refused to accept God's plan that the righteous and the pious ascend to the throne and rule everyone benignly. He wanted to interject and impose his own personality to overrule God's plan. His enviousness was such that it resulted in a world war wherein 6.5 million soldiers died only because of his self-centered ambition. All this was encapsulated in an incident. Duryodhana, according to his machinations, had caused the Pandavas to be exiled from Hastinapur. Hastinapur was the seat of a world government 5,000 years ago. It was an ancient city. It was well established, well landscaped. The architecture had been there for a long time. He caused the Pandavas, who were the rightful heirs to Hastinapur, he caused them to go into a desert area, a desolate, barren area called Indraprastha. Now, water rises to its own level. Within a decade or so, the Pandavas had so ingratiated themselves with the citizenry and been so industrious that within 10 years, this desert area surpassed Hastinapur. And Duryodhana started to realize that the citizens of Hastinapur, they're starting to emigrate over to Indraprastha. Even though I took everything by conspiracy and by plotting, I took everything and left them with nothing, now my power is leaking out to them. People are attracted to them. So the Pandavas had a grand opening of their palace, which had been built by Maya Dhanava. And Duryodhana, seething with envy and resentment like a snake, he went to visit the palace and he's looking at everything through narrowed eyes and minimizing and criticizing and so on and so forth. Now, two interesting features of this palace built by the wizard Maya Dhanava are that sometimes dry land was actually water. It looked like dry land, but it was water. And on other occasions, water looked like dry land. So as Duryodhana was lurking, slinking about the palace, he came to certain areas, and the ladies of the Pandavas were up in the balcony, kind of seeing what Duryodhana's reaction would be to the Pandavas' opulence. So at certain times, Duryodhana would hitch up his dhoti and start tiptoeing through an area that looked like it was water, and it was actually dry land. And he looked so ridiculous that the ladies all tittered and laughed and made fun out of him. And then he just got even more resentful, like a snake that had been just snapped in. But the capper was, later on he's walking very confidently through a patch of area that looked like a concrete floor. It was actually water. And he fell in, he got soaking wet, and when he pulled himself up onto solid ground, this time the ladies were going into paroxysms of laughter and derision. And then he decided at that time, I don't care what the cost, I don't care how many people are going to die, I don't care what kind of havoc or mayhem I'm going to create, I am going to destroy these Pandavas. Such was the result and the inevitable outcome of this unhealthy competitive spirit, with a disastrous result. There are 10,000 level people and there are 1,000 level people. If I'm a 1,000 level person, it's a waste of time and energy. I'll only crash against the rocks if I try to be a 10,000 level person. The best that I can do is, if I'm a 1,000 level person, then I need to concentrate on being the best that I can be. I don't have to worry about being a 10,000 level person, but I don't want to be an 800 level person. I don't want to be an 850 level person. I don't want to be a 900 level person. I don't want to settle at 950. I want to be a 1,000 level person. If that's what God created me to be, then I want to be everything that God created me to be. I don't have to measure up to a 10,000 level person in order to feel good about myself. I'm uniquely made by God. I have a mission that He hopes that I will fulfill, and that's really all that I have to worry about. I'm fully equipped, my bags are packed for the purposes for which God put me here in this lifetime. I read about the famous Olympic diving champion, Greg Louganis. I believe it was in the 86 Olympics. He was behind in points. It was the last dive from the high platform. And he had to pick a dive with the highest level of difficulty, and he had to nail it perfectly in order to get enough points to win the Olympics. It was a triple flip somersault, something like, with the highest level of difficulty. Now, in practice, a few days prior to that, he had hit the board with his head and made a huge gash and got stitches. 1 year before, with the very same jump in a different competition, a Russian had hit the board on the back flip and broke his neck and killed himself. So Greg got up there, he composed himself, he attempted the dive, he nailed it, he won the Olympics. I think it was 1986. The reporters all gathered around him after he came out of the water and they said, "Greg, you seem to have taken a moment or two there to compose yourself. What was it that you were thinking?" He said something very strange. He said, "What I was thinking was that as long as I do my best, my mother will love me anyway." And he recounted how when he was 11 years old, he'd gone to a meet. He was frustrated with his performance. He wasn't doing very well. His mother, Frances, came up to him and she said, "Greg, I didn't come here to see you win. I came here to see you be the best that you could be. Do your best and I will be satisfied." It was that unconditional love of his mother that inspired Greg Louganis to win 43 national diving titles, 6 Pan American gold medals, 5 world championships, 1 Olympic silver medal, 4 Olympic gold medals. It was the recollection of his mother's unconditional love that as long as he ran his own race, as long as he recognized that the only competition that he had to worry about was the competition with himself and did his best, then that was all that he was expected. I read about trees, dense forests of trees, all crowded up against each other with elaborate root systems. Now, you'd think in a dense copse of trees, some of the trees would be wishing that the other trees died out because there's competition for nutrition and sunlight and water. But interestingly enough, at the ends of the roots of the trees grows this fungus-like substance. And it bridges the gap between one root and another root. The result is that due to this fungus-like covering linking one root to another, different needs are shared by the various trees. If there's one tree that's situated so it's getting more nutrition than it needs, then through this root system it can supply extra nutrition to a tree over there that's not getting enough. If there's one tree that's near the riverbank and another tree that's in a drier area, through this interlocking system of roots, the tree that's in the riverbank can actually shoot extra moisture to the tree in the dry area. If there's one tree that's getting an excess of sunlight and another one that's too much in the shade, again, the results of the sun can go and be administered or distributed to the one that's in the shade. So in fact, the density of the trees does not give rise to an unhealthy spirit of competition or envy. Rather, they all learn to work with each other and to share their strengths and weaknesses so that they can all advance together. Prabhupada says here in the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, first verse, "Devotees of the Lord do not compete, are non-envious and pure in heart. In the material world, everyone is envious of everyone else, and therefore there is competition. The transcendental devotees of the Lord are not only free from material envy, but are well-wishers to everyone, and they strive to establish a competitionless society with God in the center." What I've learned is we do not have to impress anybody. As long as we know who we are, children of the Most High God, sons and daughters of the Supreme Father, as long as we know we're equipped to run our race, we're empowered, we're unconditionally loved by the Lord, we can go through life not looking to the left and not looking to the right, but looking straight ahead at the goal, keeping our head high, keeping our shoulders back, being secure in who God made us to be. If you will stay free from a spirit of competition and run your own race, you'll not only enjoy your life more, but you'll see your gifts and talents come out to the full. When you celebrate others, Krishna will celebrate you. He'll pour out His blessings and favor so that you'll live out that life of victory that He had in store. And if you'd like to chat with me, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.